You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I'll let Bobby Warsaw tell me how I did it.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I liked it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, and we have poached from the Benny and Sal podcast, Ike Opara, a two-time defender of the year, the defending defender of the year, and a new member of Extra Time. Welcome, Ike. What will you say on your first ever appearance here? We'll just call this your signing press conference.
What up, what up? Well, it's a little bit more official production than ours.
Wow.
But we've made you a bona fide offer.
Exactly. So I don't know how Benny and Sal are going to get you off this.
Four years of league man, and then you make me a bona fide offer. Thanks, guys. No. Great content on the Benny Sal podcast. I'm glad I'm a part of it. Just going to get my name on it maybe next season.
Yeah, maybe next season. We have not stolen him, but I will take some credit for like hyping you up, getting you in the graphic.
For sure.
This is a Brown Liquor special. It is post MLS Cup 24, which I think needs to be a thing.
I'm nervous about that, by the way.
Really?
Have you heard about this? Have you heard this guy in the interrogation room?
Whoa.
You want to just enter into that?
Pull it after, up.
Yeah. So could be trouble. Here's the deal. We were going to do a 1v1 with Ike.
Oh.
And we're, of course, going to talk about the Seattle Sounders and their second MLS Cup championship in 4 years, their 3-1 victory, Brian Schmetzer's star term, Seattle dynasty, maybe not, no, TBD, Toronto FC, that foul that they wanted, the contract Michael Bradley now, it seems, will not get, and their legacy, plus much, much more. Dax, Nagby to the crew, 2020, Miami and Nashville, yada, yada, yada. But Ike, I'm going to make you a deal. We were going to do a 1v1. Mm-hmm. I was going to give Ike the opportunity to bring me into the interrogation room.
Wow.
And then we weren't going to do that because we're tired. It's late. Like, we've done a lot of work today. MLS Cup happened. We did shows. Match Day Central. Thank you for watching if you did. And so that was going to go away. But now at the end of this show, I'm going to give you opportunity to put me in the interrogation room.
So I've got to come up with five questions on the spot.
Yes.
So
that's the way
that's
it works.
That's the content life, my friend.
No problem at all. But when I go quiet for a bit, it's because I'm thinking.
All right.
I'm not as good as you guys multitasking.
Just so our listeners know, when Weeby goes quiet for a bit, it's because he is literally two-fisting.
Yes, exactly. Cheers if you're drinking a Heineken. Maybe you got some Captain Morgan in your cup as well. Yes, sirree, Bob. That's the way we do this. Let's get to it. 3-1. Oh, by the way, Ike, if I throw it to you, that means I'm trying to throw you off your game and screw up the interrogation room.
Hey, don't worry. It's been a long season, so we all need to celebrate.
Okay.
This fans, listeners.
Somebody's partying. I'm missing that. Somebody's partying in Seattle right now.
Yeah.
I want to know
what
they're
having their own brown
liquor
special.
It seems like the whole city is.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, we should segue into the talk about the Cup, right? When Seattle came into the league in 2009, it blew everybody away to see the fan support. And like, I don't even care about the game at this point. I just want to talk about what it's meant as a longtime fan, like literally before day one fan of this league. And we give Sounders fans a lot of grief, and they give it right back. But to see 70,000 people in that stadium screaming their heads off for 90 minutes, the march to the match had 25,000 people, I think I read. The whole town is painted rave green. It matters so much there in such an obvious way that congratulations to those fans. I hope they enjoy every second of it. They did usher in a new era in 2009 when they came in, and it feels really appropriate that we're ending this decade with them lifting their second cup. Kalen's kind of shaking his head no, because you think the decade ends in 2020, I assume, but no. No,
Seattle invented soccer, right?
Yes.
Certainly Major League Soccer. I think they invented MLS 3.0. If that is your sort of way of measuring the league, you go through these different sort of iterations. I think that they did that. They ushered
in what everyone has done. They showed what it can be.
Yes.
Yeah.
They opened the doors. They said, hey, go spend big money on a player. Go get a Clint Dempsey. Go get a Obafemi Martins. Then a Nico Ladera, Raul Ruiz Diaz. But way before that, it was
Freddie
here's
Montero.
Here's a stadium downtown. Here's Freddie. Well, here's Lundberg.
On the business side, Atlanta United went to Seattle to basically embed themselves to understand what had worked there. Then you see it going to Atlanta. This felt kind of like a little bit of a rejoinder to that, too, to say, oh, yeah, we saw MLS Cup last year, too. But don't forget about us, LAFC. It seemed like so much had been pushed towards that. And this was kind of like an old school in a very Brian Schmetzer way. Don't forget about Seattle. Don't forget about the Seattle Sounders. And over the last decade, I mean, they have been such a big piece of that story pushing the league.
Absolutely. 11 years, two MLS Cups, a Supporter Shield, four Open Cups, playoffs in every single year. And they came into this game as certainly the favorites. No Jozy Altidore for Toronto FC. You don't have to explain that. Charlie Davies tried to do it many times, said no chance. Finally, his prediction came through. A 3-1 win for the Sounders. But for about 60 minutes, it didn't actually look like that was going to be the case. This did not look like the team that went and took it to LAFC, that knew who they wanted to be. They said, we're going to go on the counter, and they were lethal on the counter.
I mean, they kind of nachoed to LAFC a little bit.
They knew what they wanted to be.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, we're going to carry this game.
They were lost in that first 45
minutes. Yeah, it was weird. It was weird. And then Kelvin Leerdam gets the goal, or doesn't get the goal if you're pedantic and a person who doesn't like fun. And then Victor Rodriguez, the substitute, who I said in the postgame show, and I still believe this, has not lived up to expectations over the course of 2.5 years. But who cares at this point? Now they have a championship. Ruiz Diaz gets a goal. Jozy Altidore gets a late one in the 90+3. It doesn't matter. 12 straight home playoff wins for the Sounders from 2014 to 2019. That matches those DC teams that started on fire in this league, 96 to 1999. What did you take from this game? Ike, what did you think of the performance from the Sounders? What does this championship mean to this team?
So I struggled the last 48 hours trying to pick a winner because you said they're heavy favorites.
At least they were favorites. Yeah, certainly favorites.
I wasn't so sure. Yeah, maybe favorites, 51-49. I was going back and forth because...
He's literally Bobby.
He's Bobby.
He's literally Bobby.
I don't know what that means, and it doesn't seem like it's a... I don't think it's a compliment.
Right? This has been happening. Did you guys say?
Really?
It's 58-42.
53-47. It's whatever you want.
Because the last however many winners, last three or four finals, I was certain that this team should win the game. Whether they won or not, I don't know. But this game, I'm like, I could see it going either way. And for the first 60 minutes was exactly why I felt that way leading into it, because I thought that Toronto was going to be able to establish themselves in the game just based off of what I've seen from Seattle, just based on when I've played Seattle this year. And so it wasn't all that surprising to me. I thought maybe, at the end of the day, they weren't good at really threatening Stephen Fry when they were dominating the possession for 57, 58 minutes. And ultimately, they lost the game in the boxes, right? So it still could have gone the other way with, Lady Luck leaning towards...
Jonathan Osorio, maybe that snapshot at the top of the box. Maybe the Osorio foul that he wanted called that leads to the Leerdam goal gets called.
Or Stephen Fry pushes it back into traffic instead of...
Exactly. Then you got Leerdam getting 19 deflections before it goes into the goal. And that's, you know what I mean? And so... That's where I struggled big time of predicting, who was going to win this game. But at the end of the day, the Sounders get credit for what they do. They always make their own luck, and they're tough to beat. Yeah. They just grind you down.
That's the big thing for me is in the games of small margins, which inevitably are the MLS Cup playoffs, where I went into this beforehand, and finals aren't always pretty. But if you look back last year, the decisive play for me was Michael Parkhurst making that tackle on Abobasi. You go back a couple years, and it was Diego Valeri slide tackling Clark in the first minute of the game. Like, you forget about how they happened because they weren't always the prettiest. And I think the Leerdam moment, which is like, you'll forget about because that probably won't be the one they'll pick for the highlights. You'll see the Rodriguez ones and the other ones later. But that really changed the game there where the team didn't really look good until that point, but then the stadium came to life. The team got a little bit of confidence. But the Sounders seem to always, to your point, they make their luck. They find those moments. They always find those small margins, whether it's a tackle or whether it's put a cut back there, because it was a nice little combination play to get to that point. But they are so disciplined, so alert, and they're ready for that moment. Even at the final goal there, where Ruiz Diaz, Mavinga's injured, basically, or not himself at that point, but to be able to get over on the other side of that play. That's what the Sounders have been doing all season long and over the last several.
I just want to tell the people that aren't watching this, that are listening, and of course we're on YouTube and you can listen anywhere you get your podcast, that Ikel Barra has a screen protector on his phone. Mm. And he's very clearly texting someone intently.
Not texting. I'm writing my notes for my five questions for you.
Oh, no, look at this. Okay. You're troublesome.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should throw a quick. No, I shouldn't do that. I should throw a quick tweet, see what we can get from this.
Yeah, okay.
Ooh, then all you're right. straight. Yeah,
the listener questions are very good. I will give you that for the pod. What did you think of Greg Vanney's game plan?
I thought it was the right game plan. And I wondered before the game if they would bring their fullbacks up because it. Against Seattle, if you do that, you're risking them being able to play through the lines, get behind you, and put the ball in the back of the net. I wondered that. I wondered how much time Pozuelo would spend high. Because he actually spent, if you watch that NYCFC game, he actually spent a lot of time really high between the two center backs, kind of holding them back. In this game, he was barely a false nine. He was just 10. And he was just drifting around everywhere, finding the ball. And they, honestly, Seattle never really figured out how to track him. And because he was occupying both Roldan and Svensson, they couldn't get pressure to Bradley. And if you watch that first 60 minutes, it's Bradley who's controlling the game by spraying those long diagonals that they love to hit. And Oro's pushing up, and Justin Morrow's pushing up on the other side. And, you know, Benazee is getting, and Endo is getting in space. But neither of those guys had the quality on the day to actually make it count. And I think in the process of all that, Toronto got so comfortable bringing their fullbacks up and so comfortable with the rhythm of the game that they lost their edge just a little bit. And it was right after Roldan, you know, hip-checked Jonathan Osorio. It's like nine passes till it gets to Leerdan, and Toronto didn't put a single challenge in on any of those. And if you look back at that, like, there are three times where they could have stopped that ball progression, and there's, like, one very obvious time where Oro is pushed up, but he's not touched tight on Ladero. And that's the time when Ladero turns around and plays the man through, and suddenly Seattle are into the attacking zone. So it was a good game plan. They just didn't have as much talent. And when you don't have as much talent, those little margins become too big to overcome.
Yeah, you got
to
be perfect. Jozy Altidore did play in this match. He was in the 18. We expected that. We didn't know how much he would play, but once the game state goes 1-0 Seattle, then you know he's coming on. Came on in the 68th minute, Victor Rodriguez in the 76th. And then in the 90th, Rui Diaz gets that goal, and Josie's in the 90+3 as sort of a consolation prize at that point. How much did the Josie thing matter? Ike, we talked about this so much in the lead up to everything. I mean, it was the big storyline outside of Michael's $6.5 million contract. I mean, is that what this game hinged on?
Yeah, look, I think obviously Josie is their best nine, their best striker, and when he's not on the field, yes, you are worse as a team attacking. But that being said, Toronto was very good at this playoff with the system that they were running, with Pozuelo being a false number nine the way he was, especially this game. I feel like he was drifting, as Matt said, so much more than previous games. And honestly, it was working out perfectly fine. Seattle couldn't figure it out, and if only the wingers for Toronto were better on the day, maybe just more decisive with the runs, more penetrating, more often. That in itself, you know, has a defense behind, because they were on the heels for a while. They just could not get out Seattle, and they didn't have the quality. And some of that, yes, is that they're wingers and that Josie could have made space and, you know, finished off opportunities had they come. But Pozuelo and what he was doing was causing them fits. So again, it's like the butterfly effect, you know, just because Josie would have been out there earlier in the playoffs, it doesn't mean that they would have even gotten to this point. The game flows, it's just so different. But that being said, he comes on, scores a goal. If he was able to, you know, be available for this game and go 90, I would have felt even better about when I chose Toronto last second. But you know, it is what it is. And in Seattle, I mean, for me, I thought it was a non-story all week. I'm like, the guy probably hasn't done anything. He maybe has jogged, you know, he's going from zero to just now going out to running with a quad. And so I lost the bet, and now I'm.
It's a delicious bet.
It is
a
delicious bet.
Providing the brown stuff in our cups here. The game is what it is. We broke it out on Matchday Central. I think everybody watched it. I don't feel a need, really, to tear apart
Toronto was,
the tactics.
Toronto was better from 18 to 18. Seattle was better in the two 18s. And the team that was better in the 18s won.
Well, can I say just one other thing
sure,
about it?
Yeah.
And I think I made this point on Matchday Central, but in Toronto was, I agree with Ike, they were excellent. It was one of the best, some of the passing and the way they were moving was all over the place. I thought it was...
Pozuelo's a warlock with some of the stuff he did.
Well, the one, yeah, where he went on to one knee and was dribbling through three guys.
And one crowd. Style, yeah.
Yeah, it was like breakdancing. He was just finding, he was really feeling it. Yeah. And I think he got a little bit frustrated as the game went on, and Toronto FC did a little bit when, you know, the physicality or the, they didn't get a goal that, to show for the way they had played. But I wasn't as nervous at halftime about Seattle because they bend, but they don't break. And it looked a little bit like they were caught in between where they wanted to be a little bit more on the forefront going forward. They said that all week, and it wasn't really playing out that way. But if you look back at them throughout the playoffs, there was only one game that they had above 40% of possession, and that was the first game, which was probably their worst game against FC Dallas. It was open 4-3. That's not the way the Sounders want to play. In the other games, even at Salt Lake at home, they only had 30-some-odd percent of the possession in that game, and they won 2-0. Then they go to LAFC, only had 30% possession. And then this game, they had 35% possession. But in the moments that matter, would they make good use of the ball? There was a really nice lead up to the Leerdam moment. And then also on the Rodriguez goal, it was just a lovely little layoff there. Recognition from Ladero, who is always just such a warrior, but has that bit of quality. And Rodriguez finished it off. So they used the ball. They used the ball well. But they didn't need a lot of the ball to win the game.
All right, let's talk maybe big picture here. And I think the sort of star... in many ways, of this playoff run for the Seattle Sounders, was not actually a player, which Brian Schmetzer will push away, and he'll say, no, it is the players, it is the fans, it's the city, it's everybody else but me. But Brian Schmetzer had been kind of, not a really even a forgotten man, an underappreciated man. Like, people knew him, and they thought, how long is he going to last in this position? Is he the coach that the Sounders need to get over the hump? Is he a championship coach for them? Yeah, he won in 2016, but he was a half season after Siggy Schmidt laid the foundation for so many years. And this postseason has been Brian Schmetzer's star turn. And it's not just the off-the-field stuff. It's not calling out Bobby Warshaw, which, of course, we enjoyed and, you know, played up and everything else. It's not the selfie in the bathroom mirror. It's the results, and it's the edge that he is starting to show, and it's the recognition that everybody has to have based on these championships that he might be in a different echelon than we thought. And there are only five coaches in MLS history that have won multiple MLS Cups. Bruce Arena is the undisputed king. He's got a handful of these things. He's got five, DC and the LA Galaxy. Dom Kinnear, you know him well, Kalen. We hear his stories on the show all the time. He's got two. Siggy Schmidt has two with Crew and LA. Frank Yallop has two. Now, Brian Schmetzer has two. Where does Brian Schmetzer stand in the echelon of MLS coaches? Why did we dismiss him, and were we right to do so? And what does Brian Schmetzer's future look like? What can he build his career into? Because he's a guy that didn't just win an MLS. He won with the Sounders in USL. He has championships as a coach before these two in 2016 and 2019. Doyle, try to take us back a level to see Brian Schmetzer in a different way than maybe we have over the last 4 years.
My opinion on Brian Schmetzer hasn't changed one iota after this game. I think his strength as a coach is that he doesn't screw it up. He takes his best players and he puts them in their best positions week after week after week, and that builds chemistry and trust and cohesion, and it builds the type of team approach where you can get drilled for an hour in MLS Cup and be like, eh. And then as soon as you have a moment, you make the most of that moment and you get the win. Like, that, if you are coaching a team that has superior talent almost every game, which is what Seattle have, then 90% of the time, 95% of the time, the right choice is to just make it a very basic game plan and get out of the way. And Schmetzer is really good at that. And I think he's got to be very good in the locker room in certain ways, because there are a lot of egos in that locker room. There always have been. There are a lot of guys coming from different parts of the world with different expectations. And that's something that every MLS coach that we've had on this show has talked about being a challenge. And he seems to handle that with flying colors. So I thought that his game plan in this, it was fine. It wasn't any, like, I thought, I won't even say, like, it's weird that you would let Michael Bradley dictate the game in MLS Cup. It's freaking weird, especially because you've played them twice in MLS Cup. And in 2017, they got killed because they let Bradley hit a million passes. They let him do it again. If Endo or Benazee had had a better game, then I would have been sitting here going, what did Brian Schmetzer do? Why did he not do that? But he didn't have to because he had better talent. And getting out of the way is often the right thing.
He does have a lot of talent, I'll say that, on his team. And that obviously helps. I'm not going to go too deep into what you said because I think you made a lot of good points. I'm going to look at it from a broad perspective of, you know, Brian Schmetzer has now been in his completed his fourth season, not even 4 years of a head coach. And he's done what he's done. He's just getting started, right? So when he is all said and done, maybe it's a decade, maybe decade plus, who knows what he's going to have in his cabinet trophy-wise. And that's kind of the incredible part is that this guy, do you guys know how old Brian Schmetzer is?
Off the top of my head?
57.
57.
That's my guess.
Okay.
Well, either way.
Keep going, and I'll look it up.
He didn't start exactly a spring chicken, you know, coach. He's done this at a pretty, I'm assuming, later age. No? What are we
at? 57.
57.
Wow.
That's really weird.
Okay.
I feel like there's some sort of magic.
Either way, right? And so
I also predicted MLS Cup.
Wow.
A year ago.
When we look back at this, maybe, you know, 20 years from now, depending on what his career shakes out to be, he could potentially be in that Bruce Arena, you know, category tier.
No, in Seattle, you're right. They have the resources. They're building from the bottom now, too. The development pipeline for them is getting even better.
I mean,
it could be.
Yeah, he's already a legend there.
To steal Doyle's word, do you know what's weird to me? The fact that we struggle so hard to recognize what a good coach is standing right in front of us. And when all of the results point otherwise, to say what this guy is doing is pretty incredible. And if you look at it, it feels like for a while that he's almost never had the interim tag taken off. It just feels like he has been the interim coach of this team with all of this talent and all this ambition of a super club in MLS. And they're saying, oh, well, it's a nice story because he's a local guy, and he says, he seems kind of your nice uncle.
Yeah, his family ran the sporting goods store we all were at. But he worked in construction before he came into USL.
But having spent time around Seattle, having spent time around Schmetzer or talking to Christian Roldan or even players that played for him, Roger Levesque, or even other guys that nobody else would probably recognize but played for him in the USL, they all say the same thing, is that it really is that history that is his strength. And it's also that interim tag or that chip on his shoulder, or coming from the lower leagues or playing for the club. It's the same way. It's not just the selfie, resonates with the fans. All those things really add up. And the first thing that stood out to me was when he did the post-game interview with Sebastian Salazar, every time he points to his players, or he points to the fans, or he comes up with some other reason. I think, not to call out names, but it seems like some coaches like to go out there and profess their tactical nuance or whatever. He's not really interested in that. He's really interested in winning. I think that goes a long way with the team. And he makes the right decisions. He brings in the players at the right time. And, yes, getting out of the way. But that is also a skill to me.
And let me say, I didn't think his game plan in MLS Cup was great. I will question it forever because you just cannot let Michael Bradley dictate the game like that for an hour. His game plan in the Western Conference Final was spectacular. He knew exactly where, and that was the harder game. He knew exactly where LAFC was going to be soft. He knew exactly how to beat them. So, I mean, he buried Bob Bradley head-to-head as a head coach this playoffs, and that absolutely goes as a check mark in his column because I think Bob's an excellent coach. So, I mean, he did a lot. But, after this game, I still think of Brian Schmetzer. If it was 2003 and Matt, the Metro Stars fan, is here and Brian Schmetzer is the head coach of Metro Stars, I'm pretty good with that.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point to me after watching the press conference in which he comes out to the dais, they've won a title, and you know he has to express himself, and before he can do so, he's emotional. Every team in this league should be so lucky to have a coach who, with warts or whatever it is that you want to point at Brian Schmetzer, who feels so connected to your club and your community that he sheds tears thinking about what it means to win for them. Like, every single club would be fortunate. Yeah. Most clubs don't have that. Yeah, most clubs have coaches that are, you know, like, look, they love their job and they want to be there and everything. But we know this profession. We know how it works. Like, Brian Schmetzer sits at that podium and he looks out there, he looks at the 70,000 and he's like, I am you.
Yeah.
I am you. I did this for you. We did this together. And that's so powerful.
Truly ingrained in that, community.
But I also would be quick to say, I don't think it's just he's just a nice guy.
No, it's
not. And he's not just a nice guy. I think he can light into his team when he needs to. He's a competitive dude. I think he's got an ego. He's honest. Yeah. I think he can have some hard conversations.
Does he remind you of Dom?
He does a lot, yeah. I mean, look at all the coaches you named, really. Like, a lot of them have very similar qualities as far as being able to man-manage and make the right decision, be honest.
It's Bruce's greatest strength.
Yes. And I think if you look across the world in... You know, from Sir Alex Ferguson to you hear Wayne Rooney talk about Sir Alex. A lot of it comes down to being able to manage personalities, get a locker room to come together as a team. And yes, the tactics are a part of it. But I think in our conversations, that's become a little bit outsized or outweighted in our conversations.
All right. Brian Schmetzer. He's a winner, man. Got another one. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to the Sounders. The question now for Seattle is, well, what are you going to do this offseason? Because it never ends. The trade window opens up at 1 p.m. Eastern on
4 minutes.
Monday. I don't even know when we're publishing this podcast at this point. It's late at night on Sunday. I hope we get it out soon.
Who knows where I'll end up here?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
It's MLS and anything happens, man.
I told you we put a bona fide offer in on Ike Opara.
We have Tam money, right?
Yeah, oh. That's where I'm going next, baby.
Well, come on. Cool.
Got to make time when you're using New York.
Yeah. We'll see if they match. Seattle, two championships in 4 years. We put the question on the post-game show, and it's one of those that's like pure sports radio talk, but I think it is interesting in this sense.
Mm-hmm.
Is Seattle a dynasty? Two championships in 4 years. No supporters' shields, no open cups, but two championships in 4 years. And despite Doyle, you being the supporters' shield truther that you are, I think the rest of us at this table are probably sitting here saying, MLS Cup is the prize.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you get remembered for. That's what you're going for. Are they a dynasty? And if they're not, what are they? Any opinions?
I'm going to go further back than 4 years.
No. You have to go. First question, dynasty. Are they?
No, they're not a dynasty. Two trophies in 4 years is great, and I think almost any fan base in the league would absolutely take that. But no, 2-4 isn't enough.
There's
no point during these 4 years where it's like the Sounders are unquestionably the best team in the league. Maybe the second half of last year, but even then, if they had gotten to MLS Cup against Atlanta or the Red Bulls, they wouldn't have been favored.
What about second half of 2016? They were not good the first half, but the second half...
They were good. Toronto was better.
Okay. All right.
What about today?
They were the better team today, yeah.
Oh, I mean, I'm saying through the playoffs, though. I mean, they went to LAFC. They kind of knocked off everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. But, I agree with you to your point as far as a dynasty goes. I think you have to win three. If I think of dynasties in all sports, I think of the Bulls or the Warriors recently. I don't know.
You try not to think of the LA Galaxy.
Yeah. Galaxy, DC.
DC United back in the day. DC. I think San Jose to Houston would have counted, I think, as an MLS dynasty, and that's where you start to see Yallop and Dom Kinnear in this as well.
It's almost more... I'm bringing it back to 2009.
Do it.
Almost more impressive to me. They've made the playoffs 11 straight years as the format and the length of the regular season has changed, as they've lost players
to the rules have changed.
As the rules have changed, as they've lost players to the expansion draft, you add DPs, you add Tam, you add Gam, you add everything that...
Were they ever in the Eastern Conference?
they were not. That was 2010 San Jose Earthquakes.
The West is usually a harder conference.
Oh, yeah. I think they have 50 points or better 9 out of 11 seasons. They have 4 U.S. Open Cups and I think 2 other finals they made it, or is it just 1 other final they made it? They have 1 Supporters' Shield. That 2014 team, they won the Supporters' Shield Open Cup double. They now have 2 MLS Cups as well. Like, that's spectacular. That is the fans... I was going to say, I hope they appreciate it. We know from the scenes we saw today that they do.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in Major League Soccer now 10 seasons. I came in a year after them, and I can't imagine if I was drafted to that organization. Having that under, you know, my resume it's incredible, really. It really is. And so I think when we look at, when we think about the Sounders many years from now, and we think about, you know, their first 11, 10 years, that decade, it's going to be hard to argue, you know, that they weren't the golden standard, even with LA Galaxy, you know, included. When we look down the road 50 years from now, revisionist history maybe, I don't know. But what they've done is incredible.
The Galaxy certainly were not as consistent.
Galaxy haven't figured out the Tam era.
The Galaxy had just burnt the money. Huge highs. They had the LD, Beckham, Keane highs, and then they've had lows, and then they've had blips.
They haven't had a single signature moment in the Tam era.
And that's what kills them.
Yeah.
I mean,
they were the team of the first half of the decade, the Sounders of the team.
So I made this argument
consistent
in the show,
the first half,
is that I think that Seattle Sounders set the stage for, and then I'm not going to say mastered, because a bunch of other teams have done it really well as well. You know, Atlanta and LAFC now, and Toronto, of MLS 3.0, of TAM, of DPs, of understanding how to bring players through your system and have depth at the bottom of your roster, of exploiting all the little things in Major League Soccer that you have to do, including spending a little coin, to get to the top. So if they're not a dynasty, what is this? Do we have a word for it? Is there a word? You threw around, I think we were sitting around eating pizza right before this, just trying to refuel and get our minds right. You said standard bearer.
Yeah, and Ike said gold standard. I think it's, they have been an example in pretty much every facet of the game, whether it's the supporter culture or the fact that they, I think, are sort of a democracy. They vote on the GM and president, and they have the, I think the big part I keep going back to is, I think, the history connecting way back into the roots, and then connecting those roots to today. There were people at that game that had been there and watched Sounders play in like the 70s. Like,
yeah,
that's pretty incredible to think about, especially as the league changes and evolves so much. So, yeah, I mean, but the other hard part is it just changes so fast, right? Because if Atlanta United had scored that penalty and then they win two in a row and the U.S. Open Cup, it's like, are they a dynasty? Like, we, the conversations change so fast. It's the same thing year after year. It's best team ever, and then next thing you know, it can be poof, gone in an instant. Which is why I think, to Doyle's point, like the making of the playoffs every year for so long and competing for hardware is really the most impressive part.
We can all agree that the best teams in MLS history win the Shield and the Cup, and if you think of the two unquestionable dynasties in MLS history, is the late 90s DC, who won the double in 97 and 99, and in between they won the Inter-America Cup against a Vasco da Gama team that was freaking awesome, and then the Galaxy team of the early 2010s won the Shield 2 years in a row, then they won Cup 2 years in a row. One of those was a Shield Cup double, and they finished it off in 14 with MLS Cup, a great team as well. I want to see, I think the next step for Seattle is to put together a season like that, where you're approaching 70 points and you're just laying teams out week after week after week, and you just take it straight into the playoffs. And by the end, there's no doubt.
And the next step also for MLS is CCL too, right?
Yes.
If they win that. They go on and win that.
You guys are going to fall for the CCL fever, and I'm going to be laughing. I'm going to laugh at you guys all February.
Yeah, you know.
Tweet at me all you like.
I'll be there, baby. I'll be there hoping and a praying and a believing.
Don't worry, I'll
be careful, Ike. You come on Extra Time one time, bro. This happened to me. They got me.
I got antibiotics. I'm not going to get any sort of plague here. We're all good.
I've been down to Panama, played it in. I was like, no mas.
Yeah. Are you on my side here?
But I was, Scoot, but now I'm trying to warn you.
You forgot what it's like
this
to play,
is what
huh?
can happen.
You forgot what it's like to play. Yeah. Wow. Rough. You guys just don't get it, huh? This is a shot at you guys.
I'm a masochist. I just want that gut punch. I'm just waiting for it. That's it. That's the next competitive match in Major League Soccer.
I'm starting.
Isn't it? It's CCL. We're back, baby. We're back.
Leagues Cup, man. Just move to something serious. Yeah. Leagues Cup.
Yes. Yes, sir. I'm there for that, too. You know I am. What's the future? Before we get to Toronto and kind of put a bow on their season, I kind of mentioned it in passing there, what Garth Lagerwey has done with the academy, with the USL, with the first team, with kind of the integration there. They've hit on TAM signings. They've hit on DPs. I mean, you don't get much better than Ladero and Rui Diaz. And oh, by the way, if you look at the numbers on them, those are pretty reasonable transfer figures. Oh, Nico Ladero for like $6 million. Are you kidding me? A 27-year-old Uruguay international from Boca?
Yeah.
That was a great move. Yeah. Rui Diaz has paid off as well. Arriaga looks pretty good.
Yeah.
So what next?
There is going to be turnover. You know, Roman Torres was great today, but like I'm pretty sure he's out of contract after this one. And at his age, with his background of injuries and other
stuff, Arriaga.
Yeah, and with Arriaga there.
Oh, by the way, before we even go further, they won this without Chad Marshall.
Yeah,
who they lost unexpectedly early in the season.
He broke my nose, by the way.
Oh,
Chad
wow.
did. Yeah, before it went out.
I think that was his last game he ever played.
Wow,
yeah. Headed the ball in and. You know, got the big man's nose. Go ahead.
Should have worn the mask on the show.
I'm sending my medical bill.
Yeah. Must have known it. You were coming for Defender of the Year, man.
Yeah. Couldn't slow me down.
But it's interesting. Well, this is a really good point. So they lost Chad Marshall. They lost Ozzie Alonso at the end of last year. That's the best center back and the best defensive midfielder in MLS history, in my opinion. And in what should be everyone's opinions, though, you got a couple years, like you could maybe make up some
I'm going to get there. I'm trying, man.
And to do that and come to this point and win another trophy, any of these trophies would have been wildly impressive. So to do this one, which is the one that I think most teams would prefer, hats off to Schmetzer and the guys who played and Garth Lagerwey and all of that. That said, there are going to be some changes. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Roman Torres is gone. They brought that guy in, Sacchini, the Argentinian kid.
Who haven't seen him.
Haven't seen much of him, but they brought him in for a reason. Victor Rodriguez scored a spectacular goal today, and he's been very good when he's been healthy, but he has only rarely been healthy. You wonder if he'll be back. And they do have an open DP slot if they want it. And all of that is pending the CBA. Maybe they will have two open DP slots. You know, things are going to change a lot in this offseason. Whatever it is, though, as long as Ladero and Svensson and Kim Keehee, and who was awesome, and Christian Roldan are there up that spine, they're going to be fine. They're going to be at least another 50 points and into the playoffs.
Jordan Morris hit double figures a year
Jordan
off
Morris
of ACL,
took a huge step forward.
Had a hat trick in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Rui Diaz is an assassin.
More to come from him.
Things change quickly, though. I mean, you've got to have a succession plan for half of those guys, if not more, that you mentioned. I'm assuming Garth, Adrian Hanaway, that they have it all, you know, hopefully rough ideas. But things change quickly. Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised. It's silly season. I wouldn't be surprised if something catches all of us off guard with the Sounders.
Yeah, look, Toronto FC Ike knows about things changing quickly.
Because
Sebastian Jovinko was supposed to be the star back in the spring, and then he wasn't. He was off to Saudi
Victor
Arabia.
Victor Vasquez left as well.
Victor Vasquez was gone, and they did all this with Pozuelo, who, by the way, is the third most expensive player in the history of this league. Look, we don't have to put a bow on Josie. He was hurt. He wasn't able to contribute in the way they would have wanted to. That's a massive blow for them. I will just say that Nicolas Benezé and Gallardo, the two TAM signings on the attacking side in the summer, Benezé had moments, didn't really see Gallardo. Omar Gonzalez was good, but those are two places you have to revisit. I think both of those guys were on loan, so Ali Curtis has more to think about there. But I'm thinking about, and maybe this is just, you know, this is the Mobia Kugo in me, $6.5 million for Michael Bradley. He didn't get it, man. He didn't get it. I'm a huge Michael Bradley stan. I don't know, maybe people out there
Me
who
too.
Are listening.
I am too. I think it's ridiculous that he gets criticized.
Read the column that I wrote. I love Michael Bradley. I think from the start of his career, I've been a huge fan of his. And I can't really imagine what it would be like today to be looking at sort of not just money, but some immortality and some further reinforcement of the decision that you made to go to Toronto FC, coming good, to go to Seattle and win this. For that entire team, that entire organization, it can't feel good at all. And I'm sorry, Kalen. I looked at you and I thought, I think Kalen probably knows what this feels like. Not the 6.5, but to have it come up just short. What might they be feeling now?
Well, my MLS Cup bonus, if I can remember, was probably it wasn't enough to even know how much it was. How about that? It's terrible, you know. And the good thing for those guys is they want one, but it doesn't make it easier when you get to this match, and that's part of the reason why they're in this match is because the standards are that high. And yeah, you could say, oh, we didn't have Josie, and yeah, we made the change, we got Omar back just in time, and I have those thoughts often too, where we lost Brad Davis for one final, and you say, what if Brad was there? And you will ask yourselves all of these what if questions, or what if I never got injured? What if all these things changed? They still had Robbie Keane and Landon and Omar, so it probably would have been
McGee.
Mike McGee. Yeah, respect the goat. But yeah, I think it's going to be tough. But it sounds like Michael wants to come. Speaking to him, it sounds like he wants to come back. I can't speak for him, but I spoke to Josie once before, and he told me that basically the idea, and I think both of these guys have bought into this, is that they could go on and play for other clubs. They could go on, and they have played for other clubs. And in Michael's case especially, he's been tremendously successful pretty much everywhere he's been. But I think playing for Toronto means something different to those guys. They want to be club legends. They already are. But to continue to build that legacy, I think this was a step as a part of that. But I think there's still more work to do for those guys.
It's kind of sad, and I'm thinking about legacy, and we're talking about the Sounders and what ifs. And Toronto FC's what ifs are probably more painful. Dominate the game in 16, PKs, you lose. Win in 17, best team of all time, treble, and you have like kind of your vista is we are going to take this on and we're going to be the best team in MLS for the next 3 years. We have Jovinko, we have Josie, we have Michael, we have Bez Pachinko, we have this just kind of rising tide. And then you get to the CCL final, you go to Guadalajara, you play so well, you El Volcan and Azteca, and you make history, and then PKs kills you again, and then you lose this game. I mean, that's one win. I mean, Canadian Championship this year as well. They've won others, but they won't be back in CCL. That's one title of the four that you were just on the brink of. Just so close that you had at your fingertips.
But think about where they were when Bradley...
yeah.
When Josie, when they all came.
2013, 2014, yeah.
Even before then. Oh,
2012,
my Lord.
Danny Coverman's called it the worst club in the world.
You know
and
what
he
I
played
mean?
For him.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always going to be pro player, especially while I'm a player. I know that they don't think like this because great players don't think, we've done. Like, but if they take a step back many years from now and they look at the big picture, what they've done is incredible. They've made Toronto meaningful. They've made that organization mean something with this league from where they were. I mean, they built that thing from the ground up. Ali Curtis is mentioning, we don't rebuild here. Think about that. Like, they were rebuilding every single year until they got there.
Well, twice a year.
They weren't rebuilding. They were just building.
Right.
They were
fair.
Yeah, they were like Cameron Nails, and then the whole thing was collapsing after about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I know they've lost some big finals, but the fact that they've been in these positions – and what they hopefully get Toronto when they're long gone, what they stand for, they might be the next Brian Smetzer of Toronto FC. And that is an accomplishment in itself, regardless of today's result.
I absolutely agree with that. And like to bring it back to how you started this little segment, this little discussion, Weeby, Michael Bradley is a divisive player who gets a lot of criticism here in the United States. Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore are beloved in Toronto, and I expect they'll both be back. Michael Bradley hasn't spoken much about his contract at all, but he did say, I think it was on Sportsnet.
I think it was The Athletic.
Was it The Athletic? He's willing to come and have discussions about coming back on a TAM contract. If he does, which if I was Toronto, I would absolutely do. If he does that, that opens up another DP slot for Toronto, and you know they go ham. So it's like... This story, just like for Brian Schmetzer and Nico Ladero and Reed Diaz and Morris and all on down the list in Seattle, their story isn't completely written yet. It's not completely written yet for this Toronto group either. I suspect they're actually going to be a better team next year than they were this year. And by the way, this year they made MLS Cup. Like, that's pretty good.
They got some other pieces. I'd like to see Richie Larea, like, be a full-time
best
starter.
Player in CONCACAF.
Yeah, you see him as a full-time. Whoa. But, I mean, there's so much more for him still ahead. And
after the way Alphonso Davies buried Jadon Sancho yesterday, and now Richie Larea at the other fullback, like, everybody's helpless against Canada.
Wow.
Oh, by the way, we are going to talk. We have not talked about the U.S. national team's roster
Canada
for that
die.
Match. We have willfully avoided
Matt has
that.
Defected, yeah.
But Thursday, we will dive into
universal healthcare and winning soccer
of U.S. Canada.
Actually,
but,
I love that.
I think actually the point that you make about Richie Larea is a good one, which is no offense to Orlando, but I guess implication will be that there is offense. Richie Larea was rotting in Orlando.
He played like 500.
He was rotting.
500 minutes.
It was literally
in 4 years.
Bump on a log. And he goes to Toronto, and to me, the sign of great clubs in this league You obviously have to do all the other stuff, sign the right players, everything else, is that when you get assets that maybe were not valued at other places, that you find a way to make them have real value. To me, that's the sign of a great club and a great coaching staff and a great staff and a great group of players. So that's if you're a Toronto FC fan and you're looking at that and you're looking at some of these other guys that have developed, you have to be excited about that. And you have to say, hey, look, we have the right pinnings. The foundation is right. And we have the stars. And we spend the money. And we have the fans. And we have the relevance in market. We are going to be this
and the coach.
Club.
Let's shout out Greg Vanney.
That was implied. I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear.
Yeah, no. That's all right.
Hey, you know,
go ahead.
The Heineken's gone.
All right.
The brown liquor's moving on for me. Any final thoughts on these? Seattle Sounders?
Congrats on a good season. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Wow, like,
this season is hard.
Really effusive.
No, yeah. Hey, this season's hard. You know, it really is. You put in a lot of time, effort, and the fact that you get to this point, and Toronto's not going to feel any better just because they got here and lost. But in Seattle, obviously, you should be on cloud nine celebrating. Should wake up, have no idea where they are in the morning kind of feel. But, you know, it really is impressive, especially these two franchises and what they've done, what they stood for. You know, kudos to them.
Could you put to words like what they stand for?
So there's an expectation at both of these clubs to win. And anything less than that is nothing.
Okay, so I hear that so often. And so I want to make you like dig down in there because I know it was at Sporting KC like that. And you're trying to get there at Minnesota and you had that maybe with the Goonies. I don't know. What does that actually mean in a day-to-day sense? I walk in the front door of my training facility. I walk in for a game. I show up to preseason. What does that mean?
I mean, it's always like the cliche, be the best you can be today. But you have to live, breathe, eat, sleep, all of these things. Trust me, there are sadly a lot of clubs who don't view it that way. There are a lot of clubs that just want to get to the playoffs and then see what happens. There are a lot of clubs that, we might fight for a trophy and that's a good season. These clubs want to win every single thing in front of them and they plan for it every single minute of the day. And you see it from the day to day, the training to the admin, to the front office, to the fan base. It's all ingrained from top to bottom, and they represent what MLS should be. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of franchises similar to them, but there are still a lot lagging behind that. And you all know who they probably are from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
I'll end with this quote, and then we'll kind of finish off, and I'm getting in a good place for my interrogation here. This is from Adrian Hanauer, who has been in Seattle for a long time and seen a lot of different things. Quote, our goal as an organization is to win MLS Cups. That speaks to what you said, Ike. We set that in place actually in 2016. I guess to have won 2 in 4 years is maybe faster than I would have expected. They did it. They set the expectation. It wasn't about Shields. It wasn't about Open Cups. They'd won those things.
It's not just about getting to the playoffs and giving yourself a chance, but it's about building a team that could get it done on the final game of the season.
It's about Kelvin Leerdam. It's about Brad Smith. It's about Stephen Fry. It's about Kim Ki-hee. It's about Gustav Svensson. I mean, I'm listing a lot of TAM players that they hit and got right, and that's not a universal thing in this league. So we'll finish it here. Congratulations to the Seattle Sounders, the 24th champion in the history of Major League Soccer, MLS Cup winners this season and in 2016. Well done. Enjoy it. Have fun tonight. Have fun if you're a Seattle Sounders supporter. Have fun if you're a Toronto FC supporter because you went to the promised land. You almost got there.
Played with house money.
Yeah.
Like, this was not, like, well done to Toronto. They'll be back next year.
Yeah. And everybody else?
They should be back.
Yeah.
Everybody else, better luck next year as well. Okay. Let's see. Where do I want to go with this? We've talked about Dax and Romney to Nashville. Have we really talked about Darlington Nagbe to the Crew? Because the trade window, as I teased, opens on Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, then closes on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, and then you'll start to see protected lists come out, and then we'll have the expansion draft, I believe, the next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't stop. Like, oh, MLS Cup is here. Everybody can take a break. Put your head down and rest. No. It's popping. Do we have thoughts on Nagbe to the Crew? Is that unexpected? Is that expected? I mean, it is expected.
Very
come on,
expected.
Everybody.
Very expected.
Everybody knew that was coming.
From Ohio, Caleb Porter,
How does that hurt Atlanta? And what happens to Atlanta? Because now Julian Gressel's making a stink. He wants TAM. He says,
I don't call that making a stink from Julian Gressel. Like, Julian Gressel is
my framing
demanding what
You're
he
right.
deserves and
You're
what
correct.
He has earned. It's weird, like, as Ike was talking about these teams, these fan bases, these cultures that demand winning every day. Atlanta's one of those that has has largely done that through 3 years, but they're a club like on the like they're about to flip half their roster. Michael Parkhurst is gone. You know, it looks like Remedy and LGP and Escobar might be gone as well. Darlington Nagbe is most likely gone. Jeff Larenowitz and Brad Guzan, they're not getting any younger. Tito Villalba had 13 goals and 11 assists 2 years ago. He's going to be gone. Like, you go on down the list, it's going to be a brand new Atlanta United team. Losing Darlington Nagbe, I guess it's just part of it. As for what it means, they're probably going to be less good in possession. They're going to, like, he's such a great safety valve, and he progresses the ball with such security that's tough to replace. I don't know how they were going to replace it, but it, chances are, like, from the outside looking in, this is like, okay, we signed Frank DeBoer for, I think, 5 years. We have to give him the team that he wants to coach, and there's going to be a lot of new faces there.
Atlanta are one of the most fascinating teams in the league. Who guys are you looking at? Who are the teams right now, and there'll be so many moves, that you're just kind of curious. You're just saying, I just want to know where they go, what decisions they'll make.
I have a lot of teams that I'm curious about. I think the two LA
teams. Maybe Minnesota United?
I have two LA teams. The two LA teams are the ones that, you know, they – I'm very curious what they do, because how does Bob Bradley try to, you know, enhance arguably the best team ever in MLS soccer? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't win the trophy, but stylistically and playing against, like, best team that I've probably played ever in MLS. How do you try to enhance that? At what positions? Galaxy, what are they going to do with Zlatan? I mean,
those are some big questions.
Right, very big questions. And you know, they love the star power, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they want to get a star, maybe even a few stars. Maybe the league will even make up some new rules again for the Galaxy. Like, we know something's coming from the Galaxy. I don't know. Just speaking truth here. And I'm okay with it, to be fair. If you're not cheating, you're not trying in MLS, all right? So.
Whoa, that's going in the intro. We'll hear that next year in our intro.
Oh, no.
Perfect. What's the timestamp here? That's about 51 minutes into this Brown Liquor special.
We're just heating up for this interrogation. I'm ready.
Oh, my God. I almost forgot about that.
The Chicago Fire got to interest you. Because
yeah,
Dax is gone. Scheinsteiger is gone. Nikolic is gone. Katai is probably gone. Going to be a new team, the team of your heart, Kalen.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say it's been kind of difficult for a while to be, I guess, just to support them from afar. But
the complete opposite of the Sounders this decade.
Yeah, but as far as, like, I mean, I remember going to the locker room every day, and it was tradition, honor, passion. Passion was on the wall, and the guys that I played with all live that, you know. And there were Chris Armas and C.J. Brown and Jim Curtin,
and they're all scattered around the league coaching now.
Yeah, and they've all gone on
pretty
to
darn
be,
well, huh?
Yeah, wildly successful. But I think the move to Soldier Field, the new ownership group coming in, the ambition around it, but it is up in the air, because then you're like, well, what does this look like on the pitch? Because I would think if you're making
like
a big change,
though,
that would be a look. That would be great. But I think that there is an opening. There is a door for them to get back to the city. I think also, like, culturally, we've seen what we saw in Seattle today. I think Chicago is, like, one of the best. I think it's the best sports city in the United States to me. I mean, it's just, they're crazy about sports in that way. And I met so many people when I played there that were like, and we had a great energy around the opening in Bridgeview. And those first few years, we went, you know, Eastern Conference Finals for multiple years. But I met a ton of people that were like, I used to come with my dad or my mom when you guys were at Soldier back in the day. So I think going back there is at least an opening or a path forward for them. So I'm definitely excited about them. And then also, I'm just go to my other club. I want to see what Tab Ramos is going to do in Houston. Can they bring some more young players up? What kind of style do they want to play? How does that fit with the weather?
He has a chance to be their pareja. He has a chance to build that culture for them, which they've lost in the last 7 or 8 years.
And I like the staff that he's brought into with Pablo.
Look, there's a lot of teams where it's like, we don't know.
Miami.
Nashville.
Nobody knows anything about Miami.
Nashville's got more than Miami, though, right now. Montreal has to get a coach. Vancouver's looking for a sporting director. They need talent.
NYCFC needs a coach right now. It looks like it's going to be Van Bronckhorst. We're doing this on Sunday night. There's some reports trickling out from the Man City side of CFG that Van Bronckhorst is on his way.
DC United, no Rooney, no Lucho. What are they going to be?
Almeida second
in
year?
The future? Can FC Cincinnati? Yeah, Almeida. If they can actually make some moves, which they didn't make many this
for,
year.
For San Jose and Philadelphia, it's like, okay, open the checkbook up for one of those guys. Just like a $10 million striker or playmaker. Like, let's see that.
Yeah. Can the Revs push on?
Well, I was gonna say,
can FC Cincinnati not be...
Very few FC teams Cincinnati? Are actually interesting. You know, I think every team is interesting for their own reason.
Yeah.
Like this coming offseason.
Who will RSL have in the front office? Will it be Jason Christ? We shall see. There's a lot of questions, of course, you know. Extra time
Ike
driven
Opara
by Continental.
To striker?
Oh, hey. Just let him have the ball. By the way, I think we're running out of time.
Trust me, I know.
I don't want there to be any excuses, Ike.
Oh,
and I'm going to regret this. But I've listened to a lot of BS the Podcast, and I have always been so into the interrogation room. And for whatever reason, I've always wanted to go into the interrogation room. So let's do it.
All right, extra time listeners. If you're not familiar with the BS podcast, Benny South podcast, I'm on it. I host a segment of the show called Ike's Interrogation, and I get to ask the guests five questions. And if the guest answers all five questions, they can answer or ask a question to any of us on that show. Mm. Obviously, the question will probably be thrown my way.
Yeah.
So let's get it started here with question number one.
Oh, my God.
Do I try to make... I don't know why you agreed to...
I'm looking at your phone, and you have, like, the perfect... Nobody can see what I'm doing on that thing.
Mm. Oh, it's perfect.
The little screen card.
I got it for when I have travel, so, like, people can't look on my phone. It's just too much of a hassle.
Yeah.
So...
It's convenient.
Yeah, it is. You have to rank these five coworkers.
Oh, wow. Oh, God.
Okay. Personality, soccer IQ, tough to work with, or best to work. All of it, right?
Okay.
All encompassing.
I'm here for it.
Between your boy, Matt Doyle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My boy to the left, Kalen Carr.
Okay.
Bobby Warshaw.
Bobby.
Charlie Davies.
Oh,
yep, I know. And your boy, David Goss.
All right, so this is just so easy to get it started.
So first to worst.
First to worst. So best, okay. David Goss goes number one.
Wow.
Unquestionable. Wow. Unquestionable David Goss goes number one. Only one of these five was at my wedding. And it was not because I didn't want to invite the others, but, you know.
Just ran out of money maybe. Kind of
exactly.
Wins are expensive.
Goss goes number one. Like, we all have budgets. There's a salary cap at the BBUN wedding as well. And I ran out of TAM. Mm-hmm. I ran out of TAM. So Goss goes one. I'm going to go Kalen.
Woo!
Number two.
Let's go.
Number two is
first
Kalen.
Loser. First loser.
Take that, Charlie.
And Charlie's going to go three because Charlie and I bond
this
over.
Is getting awkward on this side of the
Charlie
table.
Charlie and I got three because we bond over fatherhood. And Charlie's just, he's one of those guys you just can't help but smile when you're around him. He's just a great guy.
I also have that effect.
Bobby's going to go four. Bobby went four on this one because I just am so entertained by Bobby. And Doyle goes five because Doyle's life is lived as a troll, and that's where he's most comfortable.
No, I have never trolled in my entire life.
So that's, Doyle's very comfortable at number five, but they all know that I love them in their own special way. No. So that Goss, Kalen, Charlie,
Goss,
Bobby,
awesome,
Doyle.
Doyle sucks. I got it. Yeah, okay. We got it.
All right,
yeah. You summed it up. Yeah, yeah.
I don't say that. You said that.
No, you pretty much said that. said that.
Okay, that's question one.
I don't mean to step in here, but can we throw Susanna in somewhere?
I was going to, but Susanna.
This is,
well, then obviously number one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I thought that was going to be a layup.
Yeah, yeah. That's a layup. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Or a dunk for me, because, you know, I rise up.
All right, question number two. Which head coach in this would you not want to be the GM for, and why?
Woo! So I can back out of these.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. You can. I forgot to mention that he can plead the fifth on one question, and.
Well, I'm gonna go this route. I would not want to be the GM. Four, as I just go through I'm going to say the one that just immediately jumped into my mind, just because I know him so well,
oh boy,
is Peter. And it's not because I wouldn't want to be his GM, but because he would just ignore me as his GM.
And
I would
Levy never, I would will just, not like, be ignored.
Exactly. I will not be. And so I want to be a GM where I have an actual say.
Andrew Levy thinks that Peter Vermees is the worst coach in the league. Just to
be clear. Peter would rightfully ignore me, and I think he would be very quick to be like, but this is my
This seems like a good job, to be honest.
This is actually, it does seem like a good job. I take it all back. Peter, if you need a GM to just do literally...
Take the fall, whatever.
To just rubber stamp everything that you do and then that. Take the fall.
I thought you were going to say Adrian Heath.
That's actually not a bad point because you saw the shakeup in Minnesota. I'm not going to bring you in on this one. Ike, you just stay away here.
He got his GM promoted. Maddie got promoted, right?
Yeah, but I don't think I'm an assistant coach, so I can't get to that GM position.
Oh, okay.
In Minnesota, at least. Just saying.
It would be cruel irony for him. You're like, guess what? Weeby's your boss.
No comment on that one. I'll answer all Mike's questions, but I don't even know what you just said.
Oh, these are better. I actually want you to keep asking
questions. Keep going. Keep going.
All right, okay.
Not much dead air on extra time.
That's not a good sign. That means it's coming hard.
You've been a good sport with the first two questions. I like this question. I like asking it to all the guests.
Okay.
They've played, but I would love to see it from the outside looking in. What team would be your retirement team?
Oh, where I would go to retire.
No. Where you got traded to, and you're like, I'm not going.
So this one is not necessarily...
And why, yes.
Okay, so it's not going to be a personal opinion, because I don't live my life by my personal opinions anymore.
I may
in this chair, but actually I live my life. Okay. Mindy.
So my
retirement team is Kansas City because she refuses to move back to Kansas. So I would just have to retire.
Mindy, you gotta get rid of Mindy.
I don't get to use
that. He just finished talking about the wedding.
It's my lovely wife that I expect to spend the rest of my life with.
Yeah.
It's not the city. Orlando. I don't like Florida.
Wow.
The whole state?
The state's pretty brutal, to be fair.
I just don't love Florida as a place. And I don't have any problems with Orlando. Uh-huh. I've been to the stadium a ton.
I'm talking about the team. Well, I guess that's part of it.
But you know that it's partially about where you live. And I don't like Florida, so Orlando's my choice.
Okay.
Miami, I think I could sell her on.
What is the Brooklyn of Florida?
I have no idea.
Okay. I don't think Florida has
that. That's the problem, then.
Yeah, it is a problem.
There you go.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This is just question number four, personal question. This is just a question that I wanted. No, it's not. It's not bad.
Okay.
You guys probably get trolled all the time because of bad takes, rightfully so, right?
Like, I don't.
Well, you make so many, you're going to have bad takes.
Oh, God.
So what fan base abuses you the most and why?
What fan base comes after me the most? Recently, it's definitely been Atlanta. oftentimes it's Kansas City because they think that I'm reverse trolling them.
Volume and vitriol level, right? Yeah, like there are two different metrics here. There's quantity. Right. Quantity is always Atlanta or Seattle.
Montreal is an underrated troll farm.
Yep.
Like they, no offense, you guys are passionate, and that's why you're so good at it.
People don't realize it because they're usually screaming at each other in French. But if you tweet or write something that they don't like, suddenly,
which I respect.
Yeah.
Like, they are listening, and if you say something that they're like, that doesn't jive with how I see it, I'm coming at you. So I think they are definitely one of my teams.
They're like dark horse candidates here, for sure. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's I wouldn't have guessed that.
And Galaxy fans for the last 2 years.
Because. Orlando City fans for me.
Which is strange, because my Landon Donovan shrine continues to burn bright, and I'm a huge Zlatan guy.
We're going to deviate slightly. Why is Orlando City for you?
Because I told the truth about their team. It really started with the 6-game winning streak that they were on in early 2018. And I said, this is a mirage. It's going to fall apart real soon because like you can't keep winning. You can't give up 5 breakaways a game. Bendick was in goal?
Yeah.
He was making ridiculous saves and guys were missing tap-ins. And I said, this is a mirage. It's going to get really bad. And they didn't like that. And they really didn't like it when I was right.
He's just enjoying this. Yeah. This is my
self-plug too. When I was right. Yeah, we got to put that in.
And then
our producers say we're over. So.
Oh, all right.
One more question.
I'm gonna have to go on Benny and Sal.
Great. All right.
Get a mic.
If you could relegate one club for.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Who are you relegating in the MLS?
Well, that's the show, guys. Ike O'Para.
Complete the fifth. Complete the fifth.
Yeah, the fifth on that one. No, not doing that. Good job, Ike. Well done. You saved that one for last. As soon as you used the R word, I had no chance. That's it for us. Hit us up. We will talk on Thursday about the U.S. and Canada and anything that you want to talk about, including everything that goes down in this trade window, which is open from 1 p.m. on Monday to 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, excuse me. MLS app are your spots for those. Thank
also,
you so much.
Listen to the BS podcast, everybody, too. Yeah, it's awesome. I love every episode. It's just unfiltered.
Put,
it's amazing.
You
got
to put Kalen in the torture chamber because people don't realize. Well,
this
Kalen's got
close,
a dark side.
This is as close as I'm getting.
You're for sure coming on.
No, that's it.
I'll make a deal with you. You don't have to answer three questions.
No. I want not one.
Kalen's a Hall of Famer now. He just big times everybody.
I don't even tweet.
MLSsoccer.com, 401-206-0-MLS. Thank you so much to Ike for coming and hanging with us and everybody who's been here through the playoffs. Charlie Davies, who's been through this studio.
Ranked number three on Weeby's favorite list.
True. Number three there.
Susanna is actually number one. Susanna is above this list because right. She is a diamond medallion. That's what Susanna is.
Exactly. To Kalen, to Doyle, to Bobby, to David, to everybody who's on this show. One of the highlights of my week, I hope your guys' week, is sitting down here and talking about soccer and hoping that you guys at home enjoy that as well. So thanks for listening. We'll be back.
More silly season is on.
Here we go. See you on Thursday, everybody.